The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost effective, Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.
From shareholder to board member to corporate raider, Tesla's Elon Musk has made an offer to buy Twitter. What's behind his latest move and what it could mean for the company?
He has a very weird Midas touch, but it comes with a lot of chaos and distraction and disruption. He's gotten himself into trouble constantly with regulators for just saying whatever he wants, you know, regardless of how that squares with the rules and norms of the business world.
And big bank earnings are in with some mixed results. Plus, why some bosses are cool with cocktails at the cubicle. It's Thursday, April 14th. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli for The Wall Street Journal. This is the PM edition of What's News, the top headlines and business stories that moved the world today. The latest twist in the Elon Musk Twitter saga is a big one. In an SEC filing, the Tesla CEO is offering to buy the social media giant for $54.20 a share. That would value the company at more than $43 billion. And in a letter to the board chairman, which was attached to the filing, Musk said he'd take Twitter private. In that letter, Musk called the bid his best and final offer and said he would need to reconsider his position as a shareholder if Twitter rejects it. Twitter says it's received the offer and is reviewing it. The latest overture comes after a 10-day roller coaster ride, during which Musk revealed he had a more than 9% stake in the company, was invited to join the company's board, and ultimately decided not to. Twitter shares were initially up on the news, but ended the day down nearly 2%, putting the stock about 17% below Musk's offer. Later in the show, we'll talk more about what accepting or rejecting Musk's bid could mean for Twitter. The nation's biggest banks, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, and Citigroup, all reported double-digit declines in profits and in their investment banking fees in the first quarter, a sign the deal-making boom appears to be slowing. There were both fewer traditional initial public offerings and SPAC deals. But reporter David Benoit says consumer banking has been a strong spot.
Right now, if you were to take a snapshot in time of the U.S. consumer and the U.S. economy, the banks are all pretty much in agreement. Like, we are in a strong U.S. economy. Consumer spending is up across the board. If you look at banks that have credit cards, the spending was up and kind of increased throughout March. The numbers were good. If you look at the health of balance sheets for businesses and consumers, everyone's still kind of loaded up with cash and sort of itching to spend it, I think is how the banks view it. But obviously, the world is in some tumult right now. We've got the Fed coming with interest rates increases, and we've got the war in Ukraine. And all of the banks are very cautious on like what's coming in the future, and they're worried and don't really know how it's all going to shake out.
Russia is warning that it could station nuclear forces in and around a small Russian enclave on the Baltic if Finland and Sweden decide to join NATO. The two have a long tradition of military neutrality, but opinion about seeking membership has shifted since Russia invaded Ukraine. Dmitry Medvedev of Russia's Security Council says if that happens, Russia would need to bolster its defenses to restore balance in the region. Mortgage rates in the U.S. have hit 5% for the first time since 2011, according to the mortgage giant Freddie Mac. That represents a sharp rise for the average 30-year fixed-rate mortgage, which just 15 months ago was at an all-time low. And pricier mortgages appear to be cooling the housing market. Home loan applications were down 6% this week from a year earlier. High gas and food prices pushed consumer spending up last month. U.S. retail sales rose 0.5% in March, according to the Commerce Department. Sales at gas stations accounted for much of the increase, jumping 8.9% after Russia's invasion of Ukraine triggered higher oil prices. Spending rose for a range of other categories as well, including appliances, electronics, groceries, dining out, and clothing. Consumers did pull back on online shopping and auto purchases. And Pfizer and BioNTech say their COVID-19 booster generated a strong immune response against the Omicron variant in children 5 to 11 years old. The company said the extra dose also raised antibody supply against the initial strain the vaccines were designed to fight. But a Pfizer spokesman says they still don't know how well the booster protects young children against COVID-19 because not enough of them have become sick. The companies plan to seek clearance of the booster from U.S. health regulators within days. Coming up, Elon Musk has made an offer to buy Twitter. Will the company accept it?
The Claude 3 model family from Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. With models at every point on the price-performance curve, you no longer have to make trade-offs between intelligence, speed, and cost. Claude 3 Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed, and Haiku is the fastest and lowest-cost model on the market, perfectly designed for high-volume, high-speed use cases. Join the thousands of enterprises who trust Anthropic to keep them at the frontier. Visit anthropic.com/Claude today.
Twitter has extraordinary potential. I will unlock it. That's how Elon Musk ended his letter to Twitter board chairman Bret Taylor, in which he made his best and final offer to buy the social media company outright. During a TED conference in Vancouver today, Musk said he had sufficient assets to buy Twitter and said he made the offer because he believes it has become a, quote, de facto town square. But right now, it's still unclear whether Twitter will bite. The company is holding an employee all-hands meeting today to discuss the offer, according to people familiar with the matter. But another source has told the Wall Street Journal that Twitter is weighing whether to try to prevent Musk from significantly increasing his stake in the company. So, what could having Musk at the helm mean for Twitter? And what happens if it rejects his offer? Joining me now with more on this is Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Hoffman. Hi, Liz. Thanks for being here.
Glad to be here.
So, Liz, let's start by talking about the state of Twitter's business right now and over the past year or so. How is it doing?
Twitter has really missed out on the spectacular growth in social media over the last couple of years, really over the course of its, 10 or 12 years of existence. Its stock has bounced sideways for years. It's well off its peak stock price from last year. It just replaced its CEO in the fall. Its founder and CEO, on-again, off-again CEO Jack Dorsey, left and handed over the keys to its chief technology officer, Parag Agrawal. And so, the sense is Twitter's in a little bit of a reboot phase. They've relied very heavily on advertising that hasn't really worked. They're leaning into subscriptions and some other sources of revenue. But the thing about Twitter is that it remains hugely influential. It has just had a hard time monetizing that influence.
Speaking of subscription versus ad model, what do we know about Musk's intentions here and how serious is his offer?
As always with Elon, it is very hard to figure out how seriously he takes anything. He is a professional rabble-rouser. His chief complaint with Twitter seems to be around content moderation. He really believes very strongly in free speech. He has this kind of techno-libertarianism that you see in some big technology executives, where they really believe in sort of purity of free speech and thought and disruption. And he really thinks they shouldn't moderate content basically at all. If you remember, Twitter kicked former President Donald Trump off its platform. Hard to say what Elon Musk would do about that, but certainly Trump was a huge draw for the platform, and they made a policy decision that he was toxic and they didn't want him there anymore. And that's the kind of thing that Elon Musk seems to reject and to chafe at.
How does Musk's offer compare to previous ones that Twitter has received? What does he potentially bring to the table that other Twitter suitors have not?
Well, what he really brings is influence. I mean, Elon Musk is a walking lightning rod. He's a human megaphone, and anything that he touches over the last couple of years has tended to turn to gold, though it's done so in very chaotic fashion. So look at the huge run-up in Tesla's stock price that's basically unsupported by its ability to produce cars at scale. He tweets about cryptocurrencies, Dogecoin, and it goes through the roof. He has a very weird Midas touch, but it comes with a lot of chaos and distraction and disruption. He's gotten himself into trouble constantly with regulators for just saying whatever he wants, regardless of how that squares with the rules and norms of the business world. Twitter has sort of always been a takeover target in theory. Salesforce flirted with it. It's never quite found the right partner. Microsoft has taken a look in the past. You could see a world in which perhaps TikTok or even Disney might be interested. But again, it's kind of a weird fit because it doesn't make a lot of money, certainly not commensurate with the amount of influence and attention that it commands. So it's really hard to figure out what it's worth, especially now when it's sort of at this pivot point where it envisions a much rosier future for itself.
So let's look at both sides of this, regardless of the way it goes. What would it mean if Twitter did accept Musk's offer? How could it change the face of the company?
Well, it would be private, which you know, on its face is kind of a weird thing, right? What people say about Twitter is it's kind of the public square of the modern age. So it would be weird if it was a private company. Now, what Elon Musk says is that he thinks a lot of changes need to be made to the company. And it's undeniably true that it is much easier for any company to change course out of the public spotlight. You can just make a lot of changes in private that would just be much noisier and complicated if you had to answer to public shareholders. Hard to say exactly how his vision for the company squares with Parag's and what they want to do, but at the end of the day, it wouldn't be traded anymore, and every shareholder who owns it now would get, Elon is offering $54.20 per share. But look, most boards don't accept the first offer they get, if they're going to accept it all. Elon has said this is a take it or leave it offer. So we're in a bit of a weird spot here that isn't really playing out the way typical, you know, mergers and acquisitions do.
What do we know about what happens next if Twitter does reject the offer? Musk has put some conditions on this as well.
He says it's take it or leave it. If they don't take it, he basically said he would sell his stake. And interestingly, usually what you see when a company receives a takeover bid is that its stock rises, you know, much closer to the level that's being offered because people think it might happen. Twitter stock is down today, which I've been an M&A reporter and a finance reporter for 10 years. I'm not sure I've ever seen that. So what that suggests to me is that investors are very skeptical that this is going anywhere, and that certainly Elon will not have the sort of groundswell of investor support and pressure that he was, you know, hoping for and counting on to get Twitter's board to take him seriously.
As we've been talking about, this is playing out in a very unconventional way. What do we know about the process going forward here? The board says it's considering the offer. Who has the final say on whether to accept it or not? What are the steps involved?
Well, it's like the great theoretical question of modern corporate law, which is like who controls a company. Theoretically, the board does. They have an obligation to act in the best, it's called fiduciary interests of shareholders, which at the end of the day usually means accepting a giant takeover bid if it's really lucrative. But the board, I think, has a lot of air cover here to say, if you're going to accept a takeover offer that's going to stretch on for months and really reshape the business, you have to be sure that the money is there. And I should say the other thing is that Elon showed up with an offer, but no money behind it. And you might say, well, he's the richest man in the world, and of course he can come up with it. But $40 billion is a lot of money even for him. He's not liquid. You know, the vast majority of his wealth is tied up in Tesla stock and his stake in SpaceX, his rocket company. It is very hard to come up with that kind of money if you don't have sort of institutional investors and banks behind you. And Elon is just so unpredictable that I think it's going to be very hard for him to really pony up the money on the table. If you remember, he did this back in 2018. He famously tweeted that he was taking Tesla private, again, at $420 a share, and that he had funding secured. And he did not. The SEC later said that that was all sort of smoke and mirrors, and he ended up paying a $20 million fine because you're not allowed to say things like that if they aren't true. So he has a bit of a history of showing up with big ideas and no money behind them.
That's Wall Street Journal reporter Liz Hoffman. Liz, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me.
And finally, executives really want workers to come back into the office. Companies are relaxing the dress codes, letting you bring your dog to work, and some are even giving out free booze. From new office bars to team happy hours, many bosses are turning to beer, wine, and cocktails to make the workplace seem cool and build camaraderie with the team. But On the Clock columnist Callum Borcher says some workers want other stuff.
You know, I think there sometimes is a generational divide here where you have some of these older workers who are used to having colleagues as drinking buddies, and they may be miscalculating here and thinking that that's what their younger staffs want. I'm thinking of a young woman named Jude who I spoke to for this story. She's 26. She's a marketing professional, and her bosses are 2 and 3 times her age. And she was telling me, you know, we've been back in the office for about a month, and everything social centers around alcohol right now. She was telling me there was like a random Thursday at 2:30 in the afternoon. Her bosses started scooping out this liquor-infused ice cream. Now, it's not the same as taking shots, but it's 5%. It's the same as having a beer. And, you know, she thinks that that's what they think her generation wants. Oh, boozy ice cream. But really, she's like, I'm not a big drinker. I'm not really into this. I think for a lot of workers right now, flexibility is the ultimate amenity, and they're more interested in their compensation packages than they are in building connections outside of the office with their coworkers. So I think one of the open questions in the coming months and years is whether this play by businesses is going to pay off.
And that's what's news for this Thursday afternoon. We'll be back tomorrow morning. If you like what you hear, please rate and review us. I'm Anne-Marie Fertoli from The Wall Street Journal.
The Claude 3 model family by Anthropic is your one-stop shop for enterprise AI. Haiku is lightning fast and cost-effective. Sonnet strikes the perfect balance between skills and speed. And Opus sets new industry benchmarks for intelligence. Learn more at anthropic.com/Claude.